Remembering Tracy.
Where were you when you heard about Cyclone Tracy?
Oh, I was on a plane going to New Zealand, actually, for my brother's wedding.
And you heard the news in midair?
Yes, that's right.
I remember thinking about the kids and what had happened to their Christmas presents with all the Christmas trees set up and, you know, the winds had come through and done so much devastation. What happened to the Christmas presents?
I can remember travelling on holidays up to the Northern Territory fairly soon afterwards, maybe a few weeks afterwards. And there was the sight I can still see of cars loaded up with all the family's belongings, lawnmowers and lounge suites or something, on top of the car, and the family packed in and barreling down the highway from Darwin down south to Adelaide and so on.
It was the same year as the Brisbane floods, and so having seen the devastation in Brisbane at that time, I was very much aware of what had happened, what was going on up there. And I can remember the television screen was nearly oval, those wonderful old screens, and I can remember where it was sitting in the house, and yeah, very, very clear, all those memories for me.
It's been 35 years this summer since Darwin got a Christmas present he'll never forget. Imagine Christmas Eve, your tree's lit up, the presents are all wrapped and ready, you got the fridge stocked with the roast and salads and trifle, maybe a few prawns for a barbecue. But instead of going to bed worrying about just how early the kids are going to wake you up in the morning, a storm sets in that demolishes your home, your town, the life you knew. This is Remembering Tracy, a Christmas radio special from the Salvos. Coming up, we've got actual audio of the cyclone taken from a Midnight Mass radio broadcast. We've got emotional recollections from Channel 10 newsreader Ron Wilson, who survived the storm, and the stories of teamwork and incredible resourcefulness from the volunteers in the aftermath and cleanup. Channel 10 newsreader Ron Wilson was living in Darwin with his family in the 70s.
Well, it was almost, I hate to say it, but almost a shanty town. There was a very strong Chinese influence, Chinese trader influence in Darwin back in the early 70s. And they'd have nice brick shop fronts on the buildings, but it would all be tin sheds behind. And you'd walk into some of the stores in the main street, Kavanagh Street in Darwin, and they'd turn all the lights on. And when you went back out, they'd turn all the lights off again. But it was still the place that was the furthest from anything else in Australia. There were a lot of people there who were a little bit displaced by society. Nothing, you know, nowhere else they wanted to be, so you end up in Darwin. There was a strong community of public service workers who would be up there on two-year contracts, so you had this really odd mix of people. There was those who were here for 2 years and were just there for a really good time, and there were people who were kind of still living in the outback in a way, and it was a funny area to live in, but quite frankly, I loved it. My family had been there for a few years, and we were there for 9 years in total. And I used to go up every school holidays, hitchhike up to Darwin. I was going to school in Victoria, and I'd hitchhike to Darwin, catch the GAN to Darwin, fly to Darwin, walk to Darwin, you know, get to Darwin somehow for the school holidays. And it was such a different place. It was still an adventure just to go home in those days, and you know, I loved it.
By the end of 1974, Ron was working in the Darwin media on a children's TV show and the local radio station. Cyclone warnings were a regular feature of Darwin life, as Ron Wilson reported on a Channel 10 Cyclone Tracy special some years back.
When Tracy stormed in over the coastline here at Nightcliff, the truth is that Darwin was caught with its guard down. You see, it was only 2 weeks beforehand a more severe tropical cyclone had passed along to the north without causing more than a typical wet season storm. But Tracy, well, Tracy was a different story.
So when, on the 21st of December 1974, Cyclone Tracy came into existence off the coast of the Northern Territory, it didn't seem like Darwin needed to worry too much. But on Christmas Eve, Tracy turned and started heading right for town. It's a struggle these days for Ron Wilson to speak about that night.
Christmas 1974,
yes.
What do you remember of it?
You don't remember much of it. Sorry, even after all these years... I used to write about it and report on it, but it's got more difficult as the years have gone on. Darwin on Christmas Eve, it was, you know, at that time of year, it's the weather's very volatile. Even trying to just describe what happened is hard. The cyclone hit. It came in about 10 o'clock at night, and by midnight it was just...
By midnight... Cyclone Tracy had made its full force known.
The anemometer at Darwin Airport was knocked out after recording a wind gust of 217 kilometres per hour. That was almost 60 minutes before the eye passed over. Analysts have since estimated the winds as strong as 263 kilometres per hour.
In the late afternoon of Christmas Eve, Darwin had faced squally rain and wind gusts. By 10 p.m, the winds had started causing damage, and by midnight, the damage was serious. Over the next 6 hours or so, Cyclone Tracy practically destroyed Darwin and took about 65 lives in the process, an estimated 49 on land and 16 at sea. Midnight Mass was going on in Darwin in spite of the weather and being broadcast live on the radio. Things finally had to be called to a halt when the stained glass windows started smashing down around them. This is the actual audio from that broadcast, thanks to Channel 10. The news broke nationally on Christmas Day that Cyclone Tracy had struck, and that's when the clean-up and the clear-out began. Darwin had about 49,000 people living there at Christmas in 74, most of them suddenly homeless overnight. Major Ray Allen of the Salvation Army left his Christmas celebrations to help. His first stop was Brisbane Airport, where he spent about 15 hours counselling and organising Darwin's evacuees as they arrived.
First thing that hit me was, why haven't these people got luggage? They had plastic bags, and then I realised the fact that they'd lost everything. And all they could bring with them was could fit into a plastic bag. And so that was the first thing that hit me. And the other thing was they were in a state of shock. Some of them came down in a Air Force planes, and dear me, they were hosing out the back of the plane when it arrived, because of the way in which things were, as far as the Air Force planes were concerned, and weren't built to be carrying passengers. But some of them were overloaded. Some had women 6 and 7, 8 months pregnant, and that was a bit of a concern when we found out that they were coming. So we had to organise some ambulances and some doctors to make sure that the ladies, when they arrived, were well cared for.
The next morning, Major Ray was on the plane to Darwin.
Well, coming into Darwin, just looking out the window, and there are only about 6 or 7 of us on the plane going up there to work. Well, as you say, it looked like a bomb had hit the place, which, you know, there was just metal twisted all over the place, and bits of buildings and trees were all over the place. And then when we landed, I didn't see much of Darwin itself, because I was whisked straight into the warehouse and started getting things organised, or helping in the organisation of getting people out, getting supplies in, making sure that they were being distributed, and people were in counselling mode. Some were in shock, some of those who stayed on. Met up with some friends I hadn't seen for many years, and they were walking around in shock because they'd lost everything.
And Ron Wilson stayed on after Tracy had hit as well.
On the station, the radio station I was working with then, they were putting up, we had the mountable masts that we're able to put up just to keep information going out, because one of the first things that the salvos actually did was hand out little pocket radios to everybody, because you were waiting for evacuation flight notices, and the only way you could keep a population of 30,000 people informed of what was going on was with some sort of radio contact. So every hour we would broadcast evacuation flight numbers and things, and that's why we stayed on.
Volunteers came from all over the country and all sectors of society. Major Ray remembers the teamwork fondly.
A group of guys who were working, getting supplies out, like generators, and the military were working with us, supplied trucks for us to transport stuff around. People who just came and volunteered to help clean out clothing that had been sent up and sorted out. And everybody just worked so hard and so well together.
The salvos were part of getting food, clothing, bedding and dry accommodation for the remaining locals, since it was still raining at this stage. And they were also part of feeding the workers who were coordinating relief efforts. Not without some unusual help along the way, though.
The Salvation Army flew in two matrons from one of our hostels in Adelaide. And they were in the kitchen to cook for those of us who were working there. And a guy arrived and said, "Can I help you?" And he said, "Oh, I've done a bit in the kitchen." And so the person in charge said, "Yeah, go in there and help the ladies." And about half an hour later, the ladies came out and says, "There's no way in the world we're going to be working with that guy." And the guy said, "Help me, what have we got here?" Until lunch came out, then we realised why.
It turned out that guy was the head chef at one of Darwin's top hotels and had decided to stay on and help where he could.
And here's this field kitchen, and the meals that he presented to us out of virtually nothing were of the quality that you'd get in those five-star hotels.
Of course, in a town that's been virtually wiped out, all the workers were having to improvise as well.
Well, we found a wool pack with some clothes in and slept on that. We certainly didn't need blankets. But you just slept where you could. Showering was rather interesting because we found a fire hydrant down the corner. There were no lights, of course, and so take a torch. So the women would go down and stand under there and have a bit of a shower under the fire hydrant. And then when they came back, the guys would go down and have a shower down there.
This is Remembering Tracy from the Salvos, introducing you to people whose lives were changed forever in Christmas 1974 when Cyclone Tracy hit Darwin. Weeks passed after the cyclone, evacuating, cleaning up and starting to look ahead. And it was then time for newsreader Ron Wilson and his family to evacuate.
My mum was working as a nursing sister in one of the hospitals, one of the Aboriginal hostels, and my father was a builder, so after the cyclone he was in great demand. My dad stayed on there and he was there for a couple of years with the reconstruction crews, and my brother already had pre-selection to go to university in Canberra, so he was shipped out quite early on after the cyclone and billeted down there. And my mum and I stayed on in Darwin for about 2 months after the cyclone, and in fact we were in one of the last evacuation flights out. After that, they stopped the flights.
The trauma from an event like Cyclone Tracy can't be underestimated, but Ron found the help he and his family received overwhelming.
When we came out of Darwin, we came, as I said, on one of the last evacuation flights. And when we got to Sydney Airport, the salvos were the ones that are waiting there with vehicles. And my mother and I, we went to the East Hills Migrant Hostel. And even after a couple of months up there, you actually come out with absolutely nothing. So when we got to the hostel, the salvos just provided everything. Just basic things like clothing. And every day they came just to cope with this sort of thing. And just every day they gave us $20. Which in this day and age probably doesn't sound like much, but it's enough to get you through.
If you're camping out in a hostel without a cent to your name or even a suitcase of belongings, how do you even begin to look for work or get to appointments with agencies who can help you get back on your feet? That harsh reality still impacts Ron as he remembers how the salvos helped him through it.
We were at the hostel for about 4 weeks. And eventually I managed to get a tryout for work in Wollongong, and I went down there. They took us down there and I got the job at Wollongong. And came back to Sydney, and we just tidied up loose ends just with where we'd been living, etc. there, and Salvos took us back down to Wollongong, and when we got down there, they had a unit rented for us, all new furniture in it, never asked for it back, and it got us restarted. It was just the practical help that you needed.
Cyclone Tracy affected Australia as a whole, and it seems the whole nation pitched in to help mop up. There were in-kind donations, fundraisers, people took evacuees into their homes, feeding and clothing the people whose worldly possessions had literally been blown away. Cyclone Tracy survivors were priority listed for public housing, information centres were set up, armed service personnel were recalled from leave.
They wanted tradesmen up there on the glazier by trade, and I went up there to work to rebuild Darwin. And we got these big containers that come across in the ships. We had them sent all up and we butted them all together to live in them till we built some houses.
From where Cyclone Tracy was and stayed with my mum.
This was when we were just, I think, beginning to learn about, you know, post-traumatic stress and so on. And I was a social worker in Sydney. We were asked to go and follow up evacuees who were staying in Sydney just to see how they were going. And I guess that was done all around the country.
And what about that side of the cyclone, the trauma on the survivors and how it changed their lives? Major Ray Allen has counselled countless people who've lived through it.
It affects everybody entirely differently. Some, they just take it in their stride. Some are just, they bury it. And others, it raises its head every now and then, and that if you're aware that they've gone through that that sort of traumatic experience, then you're able to just assess and say, okay, you want to talk about this? And that allows them permission to download.
Talking about traumatic events is vital, according to the experts.
If they don't unload, then it can have some effect upon their long-term ability to cope with life.
Major Ray Allen and Channel 10 newsreader Ron Wilson, two men whose lives have been touched and changed by Cyclone Tracy, have met through their work for the Salvation Army in the years since 74.
Ron Wilson from Channel 10 would be probably the most, to me, one of the most outstanding guys who has survived that adventure. In the fact that he was evacuated from Darwin with his family and as a young fella as he was then. But as a result of that, Ron has been a very strong supporter of the Salvation Army and makes no bones of the fact that the Salvation Army helped him and his family when they evacuated out of Darwin back then.
Ron has hosted Red Shield appeal functions. He's lent his profile as an ambassador to Christmas appeals. He's stepped up to fulfil whatever role he can to help support the people who supported him.
It actually reaches areas that others don't. It's so grassroots. That really, to me, is the important part of what the salvos do. They actually meet the problem where it occurs. It's no good having welfare agencies, government agencies, even other help agencies offer it, but it's a matter of going and finding it. They're proactive rather than reactive in many ways, is that if the problem is occurring somewhere, they go to where the problem is. We were discussing this before. One of the things about getting, for instance, cash from the salvos after we came out of Darwin was that if you needed it, you just asked for it and you got it. And there are problems with that. Sometimes you will be hoodwinked by people, but the greater evil is not helping someone that needs it. And that's where I think the salvos work so well, is that they go and meet the problem where it occurs. And it's a no-questions-asked sort of response. The difficulty is with a lot of people, they have pride. You often hear that they won't go and join a dole queue because they don't want to ask for money from the government. They don't want to go and ask for something for free. They won't go to a kitchen that's offering free food because they don't want to be seen as dole bludgers. And, you know, there's a lot of that still holding over. My dad used to tell me that we came from Ireland, and if someone was on the dole, you'd actually cross the road and walk on the other side of the road so that you didn't have to be near them, because it was seen as such a blight on the community. And I think some of those old feelings towards people who are constantly asking for help still exist. But the problem is, if you were in a situation where you can't do anything else, you have to ask for help. You must. And don't feel tarnished with a brush that you shouldn't be. The salvos, the help is so practical, and you never get a lecture. They don't look down on you because you've got to ask for help. You just go and do it. It's as I keep saying, it's such a practical response. And clearly the salvos are dealing with problems or people in these situations every day. And if you need help, these guys know how to answer the questions, you know how to solve the problems for you. And I think that's one of the biggest difficulties. People become so desperate that they just don't know where to turn.
This Christmas, spare a thought for the survivors of Cyclone Tracy, as well as the family and friends of the ones who didn't survive. If you need a listening ear to do some downloading yourself, please don't forget the Salvo Care Line, available 24/7 on 1300 36 36 22. And if you want to lend your support to the Salvos Christmas Appeal, you can do that by calling 13 Salvos or online at salvos.org.au. And in particular, have a safe and inspiring Christmas. And don't forget to appreciate the incredible gift we're really celebrating at this time of year. I'm Helen Shield for the Salvation Army. Merry Christmas.